3PO moved forward, his arms waving in dismay as he negotiated a steep ramp into more installation's maintenance bay. "I don't know why everyone keeps treating me as if I were some sort of property," he said. Chewbacca grunted a sharp retort. "That's quite beside the point. In actual fact, I..." Chewbacca lifted the golden droid up and set him bodily on the entrance ramp of a Gamma-class assault shuttle. The recently freed Wookiee slaves, along with a group of New Republic commandos, scrambled into the five armored shuttles that remained in the bay. Wedge and Quee had determined that these ships were the only weapons on the Maw installation that they could use to defend themselves against Admiral Dalla and her Star Destroyer. Each ship had been maintained in perfect working order by Wookiee crews. There was just one catch. They required a piloting droid, so 3PO had been pressed into service. The asteroid shook as the Gorgon pummeled them with turbolaser blasts. Chewbacca slumped into the assault shuttle's too small pilot seat and made 3PO sit beside him in the co-pilot's chair. He raised the heavily armed ship up off the floor and guided it down the launching corridor. Atmosphere containment fields sealed behind them just before the heavy launch doors opened into space. Up above, swarms of starfighters streamed from the Corellian corvettes. The frigate Yavaris began to fire on the Star Destroyer as Dalla continued to rain turbolaser bolts upon the installation. From the lower bay doors of the Gorgon, squads of TIE fighters streaked out like spooked Minox from a cave. Chewbacca powered up his weapon systems and 3PO linked into their pre-programmed attack patterns. The five assault shuttles from Maw installation plunged into the heart of the burgeoning space battle.
"Oh my,"
3PO said. Han Solo gritted his teeth as he yanked on the Falcon's controls. The modified light freighter flew up and around in a tight backward loop. The blinding flash of the Death Star's superlaser faded to a glowing streak as the rubble of Kessel's moon mushroomed in a rapidly expanding cloud.
"That was gonna be my garrison," Lando cried. "First Morris duel, now a Death Star. This deal is getting worse all the time."
Mara Jade, her face hard as chiseled stone, checked in with her Mistral Guard and learned that all but two of her ships had made it away from the moon base. She nodded grimly.
"Then we still have enough of a fighting force."
"Fighting force," Han said. "Against that thing? It's a Death Star, not a cargo freighter."
Mara turned to him. "If it's just a prototype, my guess is they won't have the defenses the real Death Star had. We'll just have to keep them busy. I don't think that superlaser can be very effective at targeting small moving objects." The Millennium Falcon soared into the vanguard of the smugglers' attack formation.
"A good thing Leia's not here," Han muttered. "She'd probably succeed in talking me out of this."
The smuggler ships drove in, energy cannons blazing, drawing a deadly tracery of fire across the superstructures and girders of the enormous sphere. Han launched three proton torpedoes into the labyrinth of crossbeams and supports as they charged toward the enormous construction. A few reinforced girders glowed molten as projectiles and energy beams hit.
"It's going to take us a year to chop away at this thing," Han said.
"I never claimed it was going to be easy," Mara replied.
Tal Sivrin's head tails twitched. He squinted his black, beady eyes at the oncoming small ships.
"I can't believe they're attacking us. What do they think they're going to accomplish?"
Director, if I may make a suggestion," the stormtrooper captain said. "We have successfully tested the prototype laser, but to stay here any longer would serve no purpose. To endure unnecessary damage to this fine weapon is folly. We should withdraw to the Maw cluster. I doubt these small ships will follow."
Tal Sivrin brightened.
"Good idea, Captain. See to it."
"Look!"
Lando shouted as the arching framework of the Death Star spun about and began to accelerate away from Kessel.
"We've got it on the run!"
"For now," Mara said. "But it may just be retreating long enough to recharge its power core so it can strike again."
"Kessel won't be safe while that thing is out there," Lando said. "And we've got to go in. Let's take the Falcon all the way to the power core."
"Are you crazy, Lando? This is my ship, remember?"
"I'm not contesting that, but I've flown her into a Death Star before, remember?"
"I've got a bad feeling about this," Han mumbled. "But you're right, we can't just run away. If the prototype falls into the hands of the Imperial Navy, it could cause a lot more misery than I want to be responsible for. Let's go in."
He punched his accelerators. Mara sent orders to her fleet.
"All ships back off. We're going in."
alone. The Falcon entered the nightmarish maze of overhanging girders, coolant and ventilation systems, power conduits, and substations that formed the inner structure of the Death Star prototype. Negotiating the increasingly narrow passages of its interior, they finally tumbled into a vast enclosed space, a spherical chamber that contained the two gleaming conical sections of the power core. Green and blue fire crackled between the contacts as reactors pumped up the energy level, recharging the weapon to fire again. The Death Star rotated, changing course and accelerating once more with equatorial propulsion units. Han narrowly avoided an arc-shaped girder that swung across to slam at them. He maneuvered the Falcon around it and limped toward the superstructure that held the reactor core in place. "I need to check on those engines," Han said, "but I can't do anything while the Death Star is moving and rocking like this. We're going to have to settle in for the ride."
"Settle in?" Mara asked in astonishment.
"Now don't get all bent out of shape. I did this once before to elude Imperial pursuit. A nice little trick built into the Falcon. Added it myself."
Han brought the ship up parallel to one of the thick girders.
"It's my landing claw. I used it to hang onto the back of a Star Destroyer, then drifted off with the garbage as the fleet entered hyperspace."
The Falcon attached itself. Directly below them, the towering cylinder of the power core blazed into the emptiness, shining its deadly light.
"We're secure here for now," Han said. "But if they plan to go back inside the black hole cluster, we could be in for one wild ride."
In the close confines of the Sun Crusher, Luke Skywalker felt young Kip Duran draw mentally closer to him as they journeyed toward the black hole cluster. Kip was gradually overcoming his fear and preoccupation with Jedi powers and the potential for abusing them. Luke smiled as he recalled how Leia had argued for Kip in the council meeting, fighting for the chance that Luke came with Kip to Coruscant to offer. The Sun Crusher had to be destroyed, and only Kip could do it, by driving it into the maw and allowing it to be sucked forever into a black hole. During her very first session as leader of the New Republic, Leia had presented her brother's demand. In the uproar that followed, she had reasoned, cajoled, or shamed every one of them into giving Luke a chance. They had flown away from Coruscant into hyperspace on a direct course for the Maw Cluster near Kessel. Luke saw the distant gaseous knot of the Maw, but he instantly felt a wrenching inside as if something was terribly wrong.
"Kessel's garrison moon," Kip said. "It's gone."
"We've been detected," Luke said. "Ship's coming in."
The speaker buzzed.
"This is Kithra of the Mistral Guard, representing the Smugglers' Alliance. Identify yourselves and state your business in the Kessel system."
This is Luke Skywalker. We're here on business for the New Republic. Our mission is to destroy the Sun Crusher, and we had hoped to hitch a ride back to Coruscant with one of your ships. Mara Jade cleared us by subspace transmission only yesterday. Tell me your situation. Where's Mara? What about Han Solo?"
Kip let his eyes fall half-closed, reaching out with the Force, searching. He jerked his head to the left toward the swirling mass of the maw.
"Hands over there."
Kithra's voice came over the speaker again as the smuggler ships swarmed around them in a protective contingent.
"A Death Star prototype attacked us. Our ship struck at the prototype and caused some minor external damage, but Han Solo flew the Millennium Falcon into the superstructure. The Falcon was carried along as the Death Star retreated toward the Maw. They were going to attempt to sabotage its power core, but we've heard no word from them since."
Luke and Kip's eyes locked.
"We don't have any options," Luke said.
Kip nodded.
"We've got to help Han."
"Yes," Luke swallowed hard. "Into the Maw." For two Jedi, finding a safe path through the labyrinth of gravity wells proved simple enough. Working together, Luke and Kip reinforced each other's perceptions, flying the Sun Crusher in tandem like linked navicomputers. After passing through an eternity of super-hot colors, they fell into the quiet bubble within the center of the cluster. Clearing his vision, Luke searched for the Death Star prototype, expecting to see it firing at Wedge's assault fleet. But instead, he saw quite a different space battle in progress. New Republic forces blasting, starfighters launched in frantic dogfights, arrayed not against the Death Star, but against the deadly spearpoint shape of a battered and blaster-scarred Star Destroyer.
"It's Admiral Dalla,"
Kip said, his voice thick with hatred. The Gorgon cruised ominously over the Maw installation, firing down on the installation or shooting across at the New Republic ships. Chewbacca studied the Star Destroyer's firing pattern. He grunted an idea to 3PO.
Oh, I simply don't see how we can possibly take out all the starboard turbolaser banks on the Star Destroyer. It's suicide.
3PO decided it was unwise to press the point any further. A combat wing of TIE fighters soared past them, firing bursts from their laser cannons. One of the assault shuttles passed into the crossfire and exploded as the TIE fighters roared past to face the X-wings and Y-wings pouring from the New Republic battleships. Chewbacca let out a grief-stricken roar at seeing some of his newly rescued friends die.
Oh, dear, 3PO said. Chewbacca, you have my complete support. We simply cannot allow them to do this sort of thing.
Chewbacca roared agreement and gave 3PO a comradely slap on the back that practically sent the droid through the control panels. A tiny streak of light shot past them.
Oh, my! Wasn't that the Sun Crusher?
Like a master pilot, Kip Duran brought the Sun Crusher into a berth on one of the interconnected planetoids at the calm center of the Maw Cluster. Luke worked the communications systems, transmitting to the escort frigate and then to the installation operations center. Wedge, are you there? Tell me what's going on. This is Luke.
Luke, what are you doing here?
Luke realized that Wedge had been inside the Maw Cluster since before the defeat of Exar Kun. We brought the Sun Crusher here to destroy it, but it looks like you're having problems of your own. We're landing in one of your maintenance bays.
Good. I can sure use whatever help you can offer.
When they reached the operations center, Wedge Antilles ran forward to embrace Luke. Then Wedge flashed a distrustful glance at Kip Duran, who stood contritely on the threshold.
What's he doing here?
Beside him, Kweezuks also saw Kip and gasped, taking a step backward.
I'm sorry, Kip said quietly.
Luke looked sternly at Wedge. Kip is here to help us, Wedge. He has returned from the dark side. Now we are two Jedi offering our services in this fight. Wedge started to snap orders to the tactical team. It didn't seem possible, but everyone managed to bustle a little faster. Luke stared through the broad skylight of the operations center, sensing something. Amid the flaring lights of battle overhead, the Death Star prototype emerged through the pastel glow of the Maw. The Millennium Falcon's landing claw clung to the Death Star's superstructure as the skeletal sphere careened through the black hole cluster. Han, Mara, and Lando sat strapped into their swiveling seats, gritting their teeth from gravity's onslaught. The Falcon held on, but the prototype bucked from the enormous tidal pulls. Once the rough passage was over, Han scanned the diagnostics.
I've got to do something about these hyperdrives. If we fly fast enough, we could just blow the reactor core and run. But the way the Falcon's limping along, we'd never get away in time.
Mara pulled herself to her feet.
So it's obvious. We've got to deactivate that superlaser. Calrissian and I will go out and plant time detonators on the reactor core. You work on the hyperdrive engines. The timers will let us get out of the superstructure before they blow.
Lando tilted the face shield of his helmet back and forth, the better to see with, but the huge environment suit that belonged to Chewbacca folded around him in strange and uncomfortable ways. He had to work twice as hard just to figure out where he was going. His magnetic boots clumped on the metal plating of the gigantic cylindrical power core. Tapered at one end like a spindle with a diamond-hard point, the core pressed against another contact point that rose from the south pole of the Death Star. Between the two points, starfire crackled as the charge built up. The skeleton of girders and access tubes, walled-off compartments, temporary quarters, and storerooms formed a giant cage around them. Linked catwalks spanned open spaces like a tangled net. Though the prototype was the size of a small moon, it held very little gravity. Lando had to work hard to keep his balance. Holding out his gloved hand to steady Mara, Lando worked his way down the immense cylindrical core. He tilted his visor to shield himself from the glare pouring from the discharge at the contact points. Above them, the pronged disc of the Falcon clung to a thick girder. Mara's voice came to him through the speaker in his suit.
Should be good enough here. Give me the first detonator.
Lando rummaged through the shielded container and withdrew one of the thick discs. Mara bent down to fasten it to the hull.
When they're all in place, we'll give ourselves 20 standard minutes. That should be ample time to get back to the Falcon and get away.
It seemed to take forever to traverse the circumference of the vast power core planting the 7 detonators. Finally, Mara punched the activator button on the first device. All around the perimeter, the detonators winked blue as they began their countdown.
Back to the Falcon! Hurry!
Mara gestured, and Lando clomped after her. A movement caught his eye from the side of the bucket-sized helmet, and he turned just in time to see the blocky, armored suit of an Imperial space trooper emerging from an access hatch above. He let the low gravity cushion his fall as his bulk dropped onto the power core next to Lando and Mara.
Where did he come from?
Lando ducked as the space trooper lunged with the vibroblades in his gloves. Mara reacted swiftly, swinging the empty padded container that had held the detonators, putting all her momentum behind it. The sharp-edged metal banged against the space trooper's thick helmet. The trooper reached up, stabbing through the plated case with vibroblade claws. Mara used his temporary disorientation to grab Lando and add his mass to her own as she shoved the space trooper. With her foot, she pried free one of the space trooper's boots as he fought to regain his balance. She slammed against him, breaking the magnetic grip of his other boot. The space trooper scrabbled to find purchase against the smooth cylindrical hull as he slid down toward the fiery contact points. Sucked inexorably down, the trooper plunged into the flaming discharge between the contact points and vaporized in a bolt of green and blue static. Lando signaled,
We're on our way, Han, old buddy.
When he felt a vibration through his boots, he looked up to see another space trooper drop down from the catwalks. This one carried a blaster rifle, but Lando guessed that he dared not use it in the vicinity of the power core. Lando pointed down the expanse of metal to the blinking detonators and threw his arms wide to mime an explosion. As the space trooper glanced in the other direction, Mara launched herself forward and grabbed the barrel of his blaster rifle, using it like a lever. In free fall, her own momentum knocked him free, sending the trooper tumbling back up toward the catwalks.
Let's go,
Mara said, returning to Lando's side. Behind them, the second space trooper managed to grab one of the tangled coolant pipes, stopping his reckless tumble. He descended toward the power core again, ignoring Lando and Mara as he hurried to the detonators. Less than a minute before the time detonation, Lando and Mara sealed themselves inside the Falcon, just as Han disengaged the landing claw. Observing the battle from the Gorgon's bridge, Admiral Dalla gritted her teeth. The attack was not going well. Her forces were being gradually worn away. She had only her reserves, and most of those squadrons had been wiped out by rebel starfighters. When the Death Star prototype reappeared among the gases overhead, Dalla felt a thrill of awe. But when she determined that the prototype was piloted by the incompetent fool Tal Sivran, her hopes dwindled.
Why doesn't he fire? She said. One blast and he could take out all 3 corvettes and the frigate. Why doesn't he fire? Tal Sivran never had any initiative in his entire life.
She narrowed her brilliant eyes to look around the bridge.
Let us show Tal Sivran how it must be done. It's time to destroy Moore installation once and for all. Open fire!
An engineer ran into the Moore installation's operations room, shouting,
All this pounding has knocked out the temporary cooling systems we installed on the reactor asteroid. It's going to explode. No chance of patching it this time.
Wedge gritted his teeth and looked to Quee.
Looks like we're about to save Dalla the trouble. Time to evacuate.
Beside him, Luke whirled around.
Hey, where's Kip?
But the young man was gone. Kip was pleased that Master Skywalker had not noticed his departure. He had used his own powers, light side powers, he fervently hoped, to distract everyone while he slipped out into the corridor. If the Death Star prototype managed even one shot, they would be annihilated in an instant. Kip knew he had a great deal to atone for. He would do all he could to rescue his friends, not only to salve his conscience, but because they deserved to live and continue the fight for freedom in the galaxy. With trembling hands, Kip raised the Sun Crusher on its repulsor lifts and guided it through the long launching tunnel into open space where the battle raged.
Kip had two remaining resonance torpedoes that could trigger a supernova. He doubted he could get a critical mass in the Death Star's skeletal structure, but a direct hit would still cause a substantial chain reaction. Then, without warning, a bright flower of orange and white erupted from the power core at the center of the Death Star, a small explosion. An instant later, flying in the opposite direction, the Millennium Falcon blasted out of the superstructure, gaining speed. Han Solo had survived. Now Kip could strike the crippled Death Star with no second thoughts. And then he would go after Dalla. The explosion in the power core sent the entire Death Star reeling off its axis. Tall Sivrin's head tail stretched out straight with outrage.
I order those two space troopers to stop the sabotage.
He whirled to the Deveronian division leader.
Yem, record their service numbers and make a special disciplinary notation in their files.
Doxson ran to the status console and pulled up a visual.
From what I know of the blueprints, Director, there appears to be a relatively insignificant breach in the power core. We can repair it before radiation levels get too high.
How soon will I be able to shoot again?
Sivran asked the stormtrooper captain.
The stormtrooper studied his panels.
If the repair work goes as planned, you could fire within 20 minutes.
Well, tell them to hurry. If Dalla destroys more installation before I do, I'll be very annoyed.
Wedge flicked on the open communications unit of the transport shuttle that he and Luke and Kui had escaped in.
All fighters, regroup and return to the Yavaris. Prepare to retreat. We have everything we came for.
They had almost reached the Yavaris when four square-wing TIE fighters shot up from Wedge's blind spot, mercilessly battering the front of the transport shuttle with laser bolts. Before Wedge could react, an assault shuttle bearing Imperial markings flew in from the left, firing multiple beams from its forward heavy blaster cannons. The attack took the TIE pilots by surprise. They scrambled and scattered. Two careened into each other to get out of the way. Two others succumbed to the focused blasts, exploding into molten debris. The loud, Wookiee roar of triumph came over the open comm channel. Luke toggled the communications panel.
Thanks, guys.
Master Luke, what are you doing here? We need to get away.
It's a long story, 3PO. We're doing our best to do just that.
On the opposite side of the maw, the Gorgon spun about and accelerated toward the unprotected installation, its rear engines blazing with starfire. Dalla fired and fired again, picking up speed in what appeared to be a suicide run. Just as she soared over at closest approach, the attack breached the containment housing the unstable power reactor. Sitting in the cockpit of the transport, Wedge and Luke flinched as the entire Maw installation suddenly became a blaze of light. As the glare faded and the fiery gases cleared, Wedge saw no sign whatsoever of Admiral Dalla or her last Star Destroyer. At the total destruction of Maw installation and the loss of Admiral Dalla's Gorgon, Tall Sivrin's initial reaction was annoyance and disappointment.
The installation was supposed to be my target, he said.
I suggest we fire the superlaser at only half strength against the rebel forces,
Doxson said, scanning the technical readouts.
In that way, we can manage multiple firings without depleting our reservoir so quickly. We won't have to wait so long between shots.
Good suggestion, Division Leader,
Sivran said. They had just taken out one Corellian corvette when a tiny angular blip of light streaked across their targeting viewport, as seemingly insignificant as a gnat. Yet it kept coming. The small ship fired its ridiculously ineffective defensive lasers at the Death Star.
What's that? Sivran said. Give me a close-up.
Golanda magnified the image on the screen and scowled.
I believe it's one of our own concepts, Director Sivran.
As Sivran looked at the vessels, his head tails twitched.
The Sun Crusher,
Sivran said.
Open a channel. I want to talk to whoever is there. Hello? Hello? You have appropriated property that belongs to Maw installation. I demand that you return it to the proper Imperial authorities immediately.
The pilot of the Sun Crusher answered by launching one of the supernova torpedoes into the Death Star. Kip felt a rush of satisfaction as he pressed the firing button, ignoring the Twi'lek administrator's pompous posturing.
He watched the high-energy projectile shoot from the bottom of the sun crusher and burrow deep within the complicated framework of metal girders inside the prototype. The torpedo dumped its energy in a shower that triggered a small chain reaction within the solid superstructure, splitting atomic nuclei and causing an arc of spreading dissolution. But Kip's elation faded as the chain reaction slowed and then stopped. The skeletal Death Star had insufficient mass to continue its own disintegration. Only one of his supernova torpedoes remained. Grim-faced, Kip zoomed in closer to the prototype. He would have to make this last shot count. The sun crusher fled toward the gravitational walls of the Maw cluster, and Tall Sivron ordered the Death Star to track the small but deadly ship.
"Get a lock on it," he said. "We'll blast it out of space the same way we did with that rebel ship."
"Sir," the stormtrooper captain said, "to lock onto a target so tiny and moving so quickly..."
"Then get close enough so you can't miss," Sivron snapped. "One of his torpedoes ate up 11% of our superstructure. We can't afford more losses like that. How are we going to explain it when we get back to the Empire?"
"Perhaps that would be a good reason to stay away from the sun crusher, sir," the stormtrooper pointed out.
"Nonsense! How would that look on the report?" Sivron said, leaning forward. "You have your orders, Captain."
The equatorial propulsion units powered up and nudged the massive skeletal craft to greater speed as it pursued the flitting superweapon.
"Fire whenever you have a target," Sivron said.
The Death Star picked up speed, and the tiny sun crusher slowed down as if taunting them. The gases grew hot in the outer shell of the Maw as they approached one of the bottomless singularities. The sun crusher danced back and forth, shooting its tiny lasers, destroying minor struts here and there, causing insignificant damage. The Death Star had to fight against the gravity of the nearby black hole.
"What's the matter?"
Tal Sivron said to the gunners over the intercom.
"Are you waiting to read the serial numbers on his engine parts?"
The Death Star shot again. Its green beam tore through the outer wisps of the cluster, firing point-blank at the sun crusher. But the laser curved to the left, tugged by the mighty force of the black hole.
"You missed! How could you miss? Captain, give me those flight controls. I'm going to pilot the Death Star myself. I'm tired of your incompetence."
All of the division leaders suddenly looked at Tal Sivron aghast. The stormtrooper captain turned slowly in his chair.
"Are you sure that's wise, Director? You don't have the experience."
Sivron crossed his arms over his chest.
"I have read the procedure, and I've watched what you're doing. I know everything I need to know. Give me the controls right now. That's a managerial directive."
Sivron grinned with anticipation as he began to issue commands directing the Death Star.
"Now we'll finish this properly."
Wheeling the Millennium Falcon in a backward arc, Han Solo tried to check how much damage the detonators had done to the Death Star's power core. He was disappointed. He had expected to see the skeletal prototype bloom into a fantastic flower of fire, but instead the detonators seemed to have fizzled, leaving only a dimming blaze at the center.
"Now what are we going to do?" Han asked.
Suddenly, the Maw installation and the Gorgon were swallowed in a brilliant flare as everything detonated at once.
"Now, why couldn't a Death Star have exploded like that?" Lando said miserably.
"Well, maybe we at least caused some permanent harm." But moments later, they all groaned as a green beam lanced out from the Death Star to destroy one of the corvettes in the retreating New Republic fleet.
"So much for permanent harm," Mara Jade said.
"Wait," Han said as he glanced back at the Death Star, squinting. "Move in closer."
"Closer?" Lando said. "You out of your mind?"
The sun crusher streaked across the face of the Death Star and launched one of its static-filled torpedoes into the superstructure.
"That's Kip. If he's taking on the Death Star, we've got to go help."
Just like a pet flusim on a leash, thought Kip as he flew toward the black hole, the Death Star followed his every move. He reversed course and arrowed back toward the prototype, increasing speed and calling up his weapons controls. The maze of metal girders and cross braces spun below him, and he launched his last resonance torpedo. The blazing cloud of plasma chewed through the outer layers of the prototype as it plowed ever-widening circles of destruction. The last shot would make them panic. It would cripple the Death Star, but merely crippling the prototype would never be enough. He had to go for the full victory.
As the chain reaction initiated by his last torpedo petered out, Kip sped over the metallic horizon of the Death Star and raced for the Maw's nearest black hole. Kip used his onboard tactical systems to estimate the exact position of the event horizon, the point from which no ship, however powerful, could ever escape. He came closer and closer, and the Death Star howled after him. Han watched as the Death Star fired and the super laser beam curved around in the deep gravity well. But the gunner had compensated. The blurred fringes of the beam struck the Sun Crusher and knocked it spinning out of control. Any other ship would have been vaporized instantly, but the quantum armor plating protected the superweapon, just barely. The Death Star pilot couldn't resist making the final kill, and the prototype loomed closer. The Sun Crusher and the giant skeletal sphere orbited the black hole like the ends of a baton, speeding up. Only then did the Death Star pilot seem to realize his peril, and all equatorial thrusters kicked on at once, attempting to pull the prototype away, but the giant vessel had already crossed the edge of the black hole. The Sun Crusher could not achieve sufficient velocity to escape its tightening orbit either. It spiraled in the wake of the Death Star with no hope of getting away. Han felt as if his chest were being torn apart by the tidal forces. Kip! A final streak of light shot away from the Sun Crusher, and then the tiny Sun Crusher followed its nemesis down into the black hole. Lando and Mara remained utterly silent. Han hung his head and squeezed his eyes shut. Goodbye, Kip.
It's a message cylinder, Mara said, identifying the small streak shot out by the Sun Crusher. We'd better get it quick, because it's falling toward the black hole, too.
The Falcon raced toward the event horizon. Lando swooped in, latching onto the metallic container with the tractor beam moments before the small message pod could fall over the brink of the gravitational pit.
Got it,
Lando said. Han and Lando pulled on stiff gloves before they wrestled the Sun Crusher's message canister into the Falcon's common area. Deep cold had penetrated the canister, and as they brought it into the enclosed atmosphere, tendrils of frost grew like lacy ferns across its surface.
That's one heavy message, Lando said as they lugged the canister to a flat spot on the floor and set it down on the deck plates.
Little more than a meter long and less than half a meter wide, the message pod was used by the captain of a doomed ship to launch his last log entries and to dump his computer cores and navigation records for later investigations. Mara punched in the standard sequence to open the cylinder. The lights blinked red, then amber, then flashed green. With a hiss of escaping air, a seam appeared down the center of the pod. Then the two halves split, opening up. Inside, looking waxen and emotionless as a statue, lay Kip Duran. His eyes were closed, his face drawn into an expression of intense, yet surprisingly peaceful concentration.
Kip!
Han shouted. Kip! Somehow, Kip had crammed himself inside the message cylinder, a vessel barely large enough to hold a child. Han leaned closer to the ashen face. He's in some kind of Jedi trance.
He slowed his functions almost to the point of suspended animation, Mara said.
Let's get him out. Careful.
Han gently pried the young man free of the tiny cylinder. As Lando and Mara helped him carry Kip to one of the narrow bunks, the young man's body sagged and flopped from grievously smashed bones. Kip's black eyes fluttered open, glazed and unfocused with incredible pain, but he drove it back.
Han, you came to get me.
Of course, kid. What did you expect?
The Death Star? Kip asked.
Sucked down into the black hole, along with the Sun Crusher. They're both gone. Kip's entire body shuddered with relief.
Good.
He allowed himself to sink back into the trance.
Good to have you back, kid,
Han whispered, then looked up to Mara and Lando.
Let's get him back to Coruscant.
Has there been any change? Leia asked at the doorway to Mon Mothma's medical chamber. She had just returned from a meeting where General Wedge Antilles, Dr. Kwee-Zoox, and Han Solo had given a detailed debriefing on the entire Maw assault.
No change, Akbar said. I wish we understood what Shilgal is attempting to do.
The female Calamarian, who had been brought to Coruscant because of her exceptional Jedi healing powers, had not moved in 9 hours. She knelt beside Mon Mothma's bedside, flippered hands resting on the dying woman's skin, deep in a trance. The leader's hand lay in a crystal dish as droplets of an oily grayish liquid emerged from the tip of her index finger. The process was too slow to watch, but over the course of half an hour, a small droplet would gather at the tip of her finger, dangling, until gradually gravity pulled it off into the dish. At a forgotten hour in the depths of Coruscant's night, Shilgal emerged from the medical chambers. She staggered, cradling in her right hand a shallow crystal bowl half filled with the deadly poison from the drink that Ambassador Fergan had thrown in Mon Mothma's face, and that she had drawn out of the leader's body one poisonous cell at a time. Her arm trembled as she extended the crystal dish to one of the guards.
"Be careful," she said in a husky, utterly exhausted voice. "Take this and incinerate it. Mon Mothma has been cleansed, and she will heal."
The star destroyer Gorgon limped through open space, leaking radiation from 1,000 damage points. Her precious flagship had been grievously wounded, Admiral Dalla knew, but she realized she did not need to make the Gorgon into a top-flight fighting machine again. Not anymore. This time she merely needed to complete sufficient repairs to crawl back to Imperial-controlled territory, where she could start from scratch. Dalla's best advantage was that the rebel forces, their sensors blinded by the explosion, must have assumed her ship had been destroyed. Now, crawling away from the energetic outbursts of the black hole cluster, the battered Imperial battlecruiser would not be noticed on any rebel scopes. As she stood on the cold bridge with hands clasped behind her back, she watched the universe unfold in front of her. The Star Destroyer Gorgon sailed on toward the core systems. Through persistence, she could become victorious. One day. Two medical droids supported a recovering Mon Mothma. She stood dripping as she emerged from the Bacta tank. She wavered a little and held on to the smooth shoulder plates of the droids. Finally, she stood on her own again, took a deep breath, and lifted her head to smile. Leia stood watching, impressed at the rapid improvement.
"I never thought I'd see you stand again, Mon Mothma."
"Neither did I," the former chief of state admitted with a rueful shrug.
"Do you..."
Leia hesitated, not wanting to push, but anxious to know.
"Do you have any idea when you'll be ready to take back your duties as Chief of State?"
"Leia, I am no longer Chief of State. You are. It's time for me to rest and recover. The New Republic must not waver in these trying times. Our leadership must be strong and dynamic. We need someone like you, Leia."
Leia swallowed and forced a comically stoic expression onto her face.
"If I can handle a few Imperial renegades, I suppose I can keep the council members in line. After all, they are on our side."
"You may find that the Imperials surrender a bit more readily than the council members, Leia."
Leia groaned. "You're probably right." The winds sang on the planet Vortex. Leia stared up at the newly rebuilt Cathedral of Winds. The new cathedral was different from the one that had been destroyed by Akbar's crash, more streamlined. Crystal cylinders glittered in the sunlight, large and small tubes like a towering pipe organ. Notches and windows had been cut into the curved surfaces. The leathery winged vores flew about, opening and closing the orifices to shape patterns of music as the winds whistled through. The winged aliens had allowed no off-worlders to hear the concert of winds since the Emperor Palpatine had established his new order, but with the success of the rebellion, the Vores had finally permitted spectators again,
not only representatives from the New Republic, but also dignitaries from a host of populated worlds. Admiral Akbar held himself rigidly at attention beside white-robed Winter as the cathedral played its music. He had been reluctant to come since he had accidentally destroyed the old Cathedral of Winds. He had feared the Vors might hold a grudge against him, but they had merely pushed on, striving to complete their plans. They had not censured the New Republic, they had simply fallen to work constructing the Cathedral of the Winds. Han stood beside Leia, dressed in the diplomatic finery that she thought made him look dashing. That seemed no consolation to her husband as he chafed under the rough and stiff formal dress. He must have sensed Leia looking at him because he glanced down to give her a roguish smile. He snuggled closer, slipping an arm around her waist. The wind whipped around them.
"Feels good to relax," he said. "And it's good to be with you, Your Highness."
"I'm Chief of State now, General Solo," she said with a twinkle in her eyes. "Maybe I should order you to stay home more often."
He laughed. "Think it would make any difference? You know how good I am at following rules."
Leia smiled. "I guess the two of us will just have to work out a compromise." Kwee-Zooks listened longingly to the music of the winds. It seemed to tell Kwee's own life story. It struck her emotional chords so that she heard feelings she had experienced through her life. Her childhood loss, her agonized training, her brainwashed imprisonment for years in Maw installation, and her sudden thrill of freedom as she met members of the New Republic who helped her escape. Then Wedge Antilles, who had opened up more new worlds for her. Now, after her time of healing, after she had returned to Maw installation and walked along old corridors, set foot in her former laboratory, Kwee no longer chose to mourn those lost memories. But in hindsight, she thought Kip Duran might have inadvertently done her a great favor by erasing her memory. She did not wish to remember her devastating weapons work. She felt as if she had been reborn, given a new chance to start a life with Wedge. The Vors opened up all of the hatchways and windows in the Cathedral of Winds. As the storm center hurled its greatest gales at the structure, the music built to a spiraling crescendo, a triumphant finale that seemed to echo throughout the galaxy. Sunrise on the fourth moon of Yavin. R2-D2 trundled ahead up the flagstone ramp as the new Jedi Knights followed him. In silence, they gathered atop the great temple to look across the mist-covered treetops. The orange gas giant glowed, suffusing the upper atmosphere with light. As the jungle moon continued in its headlong orbit, Luke Skywalker took his position in front of the procession to greet the coming dawn. Beside him walked young Kip Duran, still limping from his newly healed injuries, but moving with an enormous inner strength. His entire attitude had changed in such a short time. But while Kip had been through the greatest ordeal of the new Jedi, Luke's other students had also proven themselves to be greater than he had foreseen, greater than he had hoped. Together they had overthrown Exar Kun, the Dark Lord of the Sith. Sil'Gal had saved Mon Mothma's life with new techniques in Jedi healing. Streen had recovered his confidence and showed remarkable adeptness at feeling and touching the winds and the breath of his fellow students. Others had not exhibited their particular aptitudes yet, though their powers were broad and strong. Some of the new Jedi would stay on Yavin 4 and continue to train and grow. Others would take their skills out to the galaxy as knights to defend the New Republic. R2 warbled his prediction of when the first sunlight would strike the apex of the temple. Luke gathered his Jedi Knights around him, sensed their growing power intertwined. They were a team, not just wild cards with powers and abilities they did not understand. The others stood on the chipped flagstones of the observation platform, looking out toward the hidden sun. Luke tried to find words to express his glowing pride.
and his high expectations. "You are the first of the new Jedi Knights," he said, raising his hands as if in a benediction. "You are the core of what will become a great order to protect the New Republic. You are champions of the Force." Though his students did not speak or respond, he felt the upsurge of their emotions, their swelling pride. There would be other students, new trainees, who would come to his Jedi Academy. Luke had to face the fact that he might lose a few to the dark side. But the more defenders of the Force he could train, the stronger would be the legions of the light side. With a collective gasp, the gathered Jedi on the rooftop watched as the sun burst from the fringe of Yavin. Brilliant white rays gleaming like fire facet gems sprayed across the jungle moon, reflecting and refracting from the swirling atmosphere. R2 whistled. Luke and the other Jedi simply watched in awed silence. The rainbow storm cast its glow over all of them as the dawn continued to brighten. This is Anthony Heald. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Champions of the Force by Kevin J. Anderson. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Howell. Abridgment by Trevi Johnson. Champions of the Force is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1994, all rights reserved. The book Star Wars Champions of the Force, Volume 3 of the Jedi Academy trilogy, is available wherever Bantam books are sold.